And now,
great to be back.
Back to the Bill Frank Radio Show.
Awesome.
And your host, Bill Frank.
Welcome back. Those of us watching the evening news on television expect our reporters to be objective, professional, and truthful when it comes to the stories they report. But few of us stop to consider what goes on inside the head of these reporters that we invite into our homes. My next guest takes us behind the facade that news reporters project on the camera. She brings humanity to the otherwise sterile persona most news people project. Melissa McCarty is a seasoned television news reporter and anchor with more than 15 years' experience, most recently with CBS2 and KCAL 9 News in Los Angeles. Throughout her career, however, Melissa hid a tumultuous upbringing and chaotic family life from her friends and colleagues. Until now. She's written an autobiography titled News Girls Don't Cry, in which she opens up about her past and how it drove her to where she is today, a host for Newsbreaker, a division of Aura TV. Joining us from Los Angeles, welcome to the show, Melissa. How are you today?
I'm wonderful. Happy to be joining you. Thank you.
Well, thank you for being our guest. First of all, I'm a media junkie, so your book had me at the title, News Girls Don't Cry. Very, very clever title, and it just drew me right in. I was expecting when I picked it up, though, to read about the trials and the tribulations rising up through the ranks of television news reporting, which the book has, but it's much more than that, too. What I found interesting is your backstory, your life story. And so I want to start with the Horatio Alger aspect of your story. Young woman rises above her upbringing and her surroundings to succeed in her profession. So tell us about your childhood and give us the moment when you decided to take a different path.
There were moments that had a huge impact on my life. And it's something I explore in the book as well, because my older brother, he had a really tough life, and I always, from a young age, remember wanting more and questioning everything around me, whereas he didn't. And I find that fascinating when it comes to siblings growing up, is why does one go one direction, another goes a completely opposite direction.
Yes.
So by the time I was 19 years old, what I discuss in the book is my environment, mostly growing up in the East Bay of Northern California. It was rough. I mean, I would see random people getting beaten on the streets just for no reason whatsoever. There were many times living in Oakland for a few years that it became, you know, very close to my life being in jeopardy several times from the environment, or, you know, triggers that I couldn't control that were very intense and hostile around me. The group that I had, I was always a follower of my older brother, so I basically hung around his crowd because I was so shy. And he had a really tough crowd, a lot of drug dealers, gang members. So by the time I was 19, we attended two funerals. Two friends murdered separately 1 year apart. And at the time, I didn't think that was abnormal. I thought that, you know, people just went through grief and saw a young person pass. And even though I saw my friend's mother on bended knee and gripping the soil and grieving over her son's casket, I didn't think this was abnormal. I was just, you know, saddened by it. But I started to question, is this something that other people all live through and go through? Is it normal to fear for your life every day when you go to school? Okay. There's another incident where I was celebrating my 19th birthday. Some people crashed the party that I didn't know. Gang members, because it was, you know, a main thoroughfare that I lived off of, and I wasn't smart enough to think about security, and I had no money. And a stabbing broke out at my birthday party, and I saw this guy being stabbed several times. And the end of the night, I talk about in my book, when I'm on bended knees scrubbing up the blood on this recreational room that I rented, I just started thinking, you know, this is not going to be my life. Even though everyone else experienced these things that I was experienced, that I knew that something had to be done. I had to think out of the box. I had to reach beyond my environment, the people that I knew. And I really turned to television to help me fantasize and escape and think of ways to change my path.
Let me stop you right there, because why television? I mean, you know, what in your background prepared you to enter into one of the most competitive careers in the world, that the career of a TV news reporter? I mean, what role models, what success markers did you have? Because that's a dramatic jump from being in a gang-infested environment to wanting to be in front of the camera on one of the most visible roles that one can have.
At first, television was just this fantasy world that sucked me in, and the Hollywood life really captured my attention for some reason. And then there was the Diane Sawyers and CNN anchors that just ignited something in me, watching these women who I thought were so beautiful and so smart. And the thought of being one of them one day was laughable. And when I shared, you know, my thoughts out loud, people laughed at me. But, you know, the good thing was, I talk about sometimes in the book, it's good to have an underlining of anger in life, because it can also evoke change. And you can grasp at whatever you need at the time. And for me, being a little resentful at going through some of the things that I experienced. And as I grew up, I met other girls that didn't have this life. And I at first resented them for having a better life. And then I realized, well, you know, I started to compare in a competitive, healthy way, and it drove me. And so I was just, I didn't really have a particular role model, but it was just a combination of seeing things on television and thinking, maybe that can be me, and exploring it a little bit more. And the more people in my environment said, oh, you can't do that, that's laughable, you know, you're not really going to be a newscaster, the more I was driven to do so. And I, you know, leaned on my father to help me find the tools and the right path and the steps. I think it's so important for everyone to have a plan and to stick to the plan. When it comes to news reporting, I was always a good writer, and I thought that was my passion and it was my outlet. And I thought that I would be a good voice for the community. And it was also at a time when I was looking around and thinking and just questioning, why is there such inequality? Why is there such imbalance in life? Why does this person struggle and this person doesn't? You know, is this the end all for this community, and how can it be better? And there were so many things that I wanted to, you know, sink my teeth into, that I felt that if I become a part of the community as far as being a voice, maybe I can find solutions and help my brother and help my family, help my friends. And it was really selfish reasons where I'm going to go out and I'm going to, you know, be the leader of this community and learn all this information. I'm going to get it first, and I'm going to help everyone in my life rise above what they're going through. And I would hope that that's why a lot of people choose broadcast journalism and news reporting. It's to find answers and solutions.
All right. My guest is Melissa McCarthy, author of the new book, News Girls Don't Cry. And there was a lot in that answer, Melissa. I want to go back to a couple of things if we can. First of all, you said that your father was very supportive. How important was it for you, and how important is it for other people to have that support system in place? Somebody who, despite all of the negativity that people around you were throwing at you, you can't do this, you're not good enough, and so forth, to have somebody in your corner to stand up for you and to say, yes, you can, and let me show you how.
It's everything. And, you know, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. Growing up, we were at odds. But, you know, we were at odds most of the first portion of my life because he saw the path that I was going down and the people I was surrounding myself with. But the second I came to him with something very instrumental and something beyond what he was seeing, he jumped right in there. He had my back and he helped guide me. You know, obviously parents aren't going to approve of everything. They don't want their kids to go down a certain path. But once I started to show initiative, he was there. He had my back. And at the right times, he was there in the right moments. And he's a brilliant man. He graduated from Cal Berkeley, and he really helped me, you know, just get hungry for more and ignite steps so I can take over and fly my own course, which I did. And the biggest, I think, success tool that I have is every day of my life, I made a short-term plan and then a long-term plan. And every day I would check the status on that. And even when I was in television, I would critique myself every single day for years. And I don't think you ever stop because you always want to progress. But it's really important to have a support system. And if you don't, I always tell kids that I speak to at-risk children that don't have anyone, you don't necessarily need someone pushing you as long as you have something within yourself that is driving you. You can do it on your own, but if your loved ones and if your friends are around, it's nice to have that support, but you don't need it. And a lot of people don't have it. It's not the end all if you don't. You can do it on your own.
So very true. Now, Melissa, I want to come to what I thought was one of the most pivotal points in the book, and that was your observation when you realized that as a reporter, you were going to be covering stories about the exact people from whom you were trying to escape. So tell us about this constant struggle you had between trying to rise to the top of your profession and the forces that kept pulling you back.
Well, I felt like a hypocrite many a days, because there were times when I was chasing after a DUI suspect who was on a hit and run, or, you know, just certain criminals that were up to no good, and I was supposed to shed a light on them. Then I would come home to my apartment, and, you know, my brother was drinking and doing drugs with gang members who I knew were felons and criminals, and they were up to no good, and I knew what they were up to, and I just felt that I had no control at one point, because I was talking about things that I would go home and see in my own apartment, and I tried to control it, but you just, sometimes you can't. There's a force more powerful than you, and he was my older brother, and I just felt like a hypocrite sometimes. So that just pushed me even harder to do right by everyone else, because I couldn't do it in my own home and with my own brother. And as the years went on and my voice got stronger, and I said, I'm not going to deal with this environment, take it outside, take it to, you know, another place, I just want nothing to do with it, you know, those people didn't go away. I talk about an incident in the book when I made it all the way to Los Angeles, Southern California. I'm with SWAT and the drug task force and the gang unit. One of the people that I'm reporting on, and they're doing a random search for on this huge secret mission at 6 o'clock in the morning, one of the, you know, alleged thugs that they bring down, I knew the person. And it's just a really uncomfortable feeling to know that you have gone so far in life, but you still are pushed back a little bit from the past. It was uncomfortable, but then you just learn to embrace it, and you realize, wow, I have come. This is, you know, not normal, but look how far I've come.
Good observation.
And you see that some people are still stuck on a path that you escaped from. Take pride in that. But
so
it was bizarre. It was weird.
Well, let's talk about this relationship that you had with your brother, Mikey, because that is also central to the book, and it's central to the conflict that you felt in your professional career. So why is Mikey such an important figure in your story, and why have you always viewed Mikey as your hero?
I think a lot of it in the beginning was guilt, not noticing the signs. And when I look back, and a lot of people can relate to this if they have addicts or someone in their family who has mental illnesses, I think they'll admit to themselves deep down that there were always signs and pleas for help. And I received many of those. I didn't know how to deal with it. I wasn't mature enough emotionally to accept that it was happening in my household, even though, you know, I was helping to share these stories of others going through similar things for the news. It was hard for me to accept that it was in my family. And then once I really did, and I embraced it and I accepted, he was bipolar. He has several, you know, social ailments, huge social phobias, severe chronic alcoholic. He'll battle with that every single day of his life. He just has so many ailments to contend with that I started to see how much he struggles every single day. And I realized, wow, how strong is my brother to contend with this mental warfare, these racing thoughts, insomnia, fears, you know, just the process that it takes and the time that it takes for him to just put on clothes and leave the house, and how easy it is for most people, and that they take that for granted. And the more I see his legs shake under a table, or, you know, his body tense up when we're in a crowded public arena, it's endearing. It's a vulnerability that not many people will ever understand. And I just look at him, and I realized that he is going through so much at every second of every day. He is stronger than I could ever be, and he's stronger than anyone I've ever known.
Let me stop you right there, because this is really central to the book, too, and it's this conflict that Mikey caused in your life. How were you able to compartmentalize your personal life in such a way that it didn't show up in the work that you did on camera for the news organizations?
You know, there were times when I was carrying around such burden, and I was at work I remember there was one suicide call that I received on the way to interview the mayor of the town that I was working in. So you can only imagine. But I knew from day one to even be a news reporter, you had to be mentally and emotionally strong. And I was that from a young age, fighting off bullies and, bad environments. And when it came to reporting the news, if I were to break down and focus on my personal problems, I was taken away from someone else going through something themselves. And it's a huge responsibility that you take on when you show up in someone's community and they're grieving to you. They choose you to share their tragedy with. And for you not to take that seriously and for you to only care about yourself and your problems, no matter how great they are, it's a disservice to the family, to those grieving, to the issue, to the community, to the topic. You know, news is so chaotic and so intense and emotionally trying that you really have to be on your A game at all times. You have to focus and they have to be number one. You worry about what's going on in your personal life when you get a second to. But, you know, when you love what you do and you're doing it for the right reasons and you're in that situation, nothing else crosses your mind but that situation in front of you, because it's normally so horrific.
That was a very good description and a very poignant description as well. But Melissa, when you hold in that pressure, it's like holding a balloon. You know, you squeeze one end of the balloon and the air moves to another end. So in what ways did the stress of your outside life ultimately manifest itself in your career?
The way it manifested with my personal life, did I want my family and friends and my loved ones to suffer? No, but I certainly didn't want, you know, people that were suffering tragedies to suffer either. So what happened for me, I obviously couldn't balance both. It was just impossible for me. It was too much to bear. So I just became really distant and cold with my family and in relationships. You know, I'm single. I'm still in the dating scene. And I realized the mistakes I made over the years, it was just this hostility and aggression and coldness that I had. And I know that sounds weird, but I just was tapped out from 10 hours a day of just such high emotions. When I was done working, you know, I didn't have much to say, you know, during a dinner date or to family on the phone. I had nothing. My tank was empty emotionally and mentally. And, you know, I wasn't a good sounding board. I wasn't, pleasant to be around often because I stopped smiling and I stopped laughing and my personality changed. And it was just something that people pointed out to me little by little over the years when I realized the business and what I was going through personally, all of it being too much for me. Because a lot of reporters I knew, they had great, happy, healthy lives. You know, they were entrenched in tragedy, but they went home and they didn't have to deal with the things that I was dealing with. So they, you know, they had outlets. They could escape. I never had that escape. I carried so much around that it just really consumed me and I became a different person. And I didn't like the person I was becoming.
Well, ultimately, Melissa, you got fired from your reporting job. But as the saying goes, you know, when a door closes, a window opens. And now you're making a fundamental change in direction, going from news reporting to entertainment. In fact, in the book, you say it was time to try entertainment. Now, you had all of these lofty goals, and you certainly were very empathetic with the people whose tragedies you were reporting at the time. So my question to you is, why entertainment and why now?
When that happened with the company, I could have easily gone across the street or taken another position in local news. But it was such a monumental moment when that happened because I wasn't ready to leave. It had been so much of my life. But it had to have happened because I realized that I no longer wanted to show up on somebody's worst day. I didn't want to knock on doors when someone just passed away. I didn't want to talk about the daily murder and be at a crime scene for another 10 years of my life. And I was always fascinated with entertaining people and making people laugh. And I used to have a great personality before, you know, I felt that it was deteriorating over a career of grief in dealing with that. But when that happened, it was a complete professional breakdown for me. I was lost. And I knew that the book, was number one priority. But for the rest of my life, it was a matter of transitioning and being in a happier place, which was entertainment. But it wasn't easy because I had been trying to do that for a year prior, but nobody in the industry was taking me serious because they saw me as serious news girl. and they couldn't imagine me laughing and joking with celebrities and talking about, you know, movies and TV shows. And I really wanted to do that. But like everything in life, when someone says, I don't know if she can do it, I'm driven and I'm focused and I'm going to, you know, work that much harder to prove myself. So I got a break with a network on the internet, which was also scary because I've been on television my entire life. This internet thing is new. You know, Katie Kirk went to Yahoo, which is good, but still, you know, what's this whole internet thing about? But when I heard that it was attached to Larry King, who is a friend of mine, I realized, okay, well, this is cutting edge. This is something. They're giving me a shot. They're allowing me to transition, you know, in a slow, comfortable pace. So I just went for it, and I'm still doing it now. Ever since I made that transition, my family, my mom came to me recently, and she said, you know, the old you is back.
That's
she said,
nice.
I was worried about you because,
yeah.
you know, you lost yourself, you changed, and now you're back. You know, that says it right there.
It does. It does. Now, let me just plug the gig. You're on Newsbreaker, which is a division of Aura TV, which is a new cutting-edge TV network that's online, as you pointed out. It was created by Larry King, you mentioned, but the other person behind it, and frankly, the money person behind it, is Mexican businessman Carlos Slim, who is one of the richest men in the world, if not the richest man, depending on what day you look. So
yes.
Tell us about the gig. I mean, you know, what's it like working with Larry King? What's it like working for Carlos Slim?
First of all, Carlos Slim is the nicest, sweetest teddy bear of a person you'll ever meet in your life. And I'm very grateful that I have gotten a chance to meet him and talk with him in the times that I have. Larry, he's always been just this American treasure. And, you know, I'm good friends with his wife, Sean. I think he has done in life what I hope to accomplish. And maybe I still will. You know, but he has made an impact and he has a legacy in news and broadcast and in people's lives that I've always wanted to make that. I've always wanted to have that platform and that voice. So I'm a huge fan of his, number one, but then to work with him every day, he's funny. I mean, every second of the day, he's funny. And, you know, he works harder at 80 years old than I ever have in my entire life.
I find that hard to believe, but okay, that's good.
He just keeps going. And it's just, you know, I learn little things. His storytelling, the way he deals with his guests, just the person that he is. I'm really proud to be a part of this. It's a low-level production as far as it's just, you know, a family operation that is really gaining steam and I think will soar soon enough because of just the amount of followers and the attention that we're just now starting to get. And I think it does want to be a Huffington Post, Yahoo type of enterprise. And it, one day it will be. It's fun. It's a healthier environment for me. I'm not stuck in a live truck every day. And I'm learning on the job, learning about myself because I do a variety. It's not just news anymore. I do viral videos, human interest, you know, comedic type of stories. And I really had to look within myself and pull down that personality that I suppressed over the years. And I have to rediscover it. So it's been challenging, but great. At the same time.
That is great. My guest is Melissa McCarthy, author of the book News Girls Don't Cry. Melissa, what do you want readers to take away from reading your book, News Girls Don't Cry?
It's important to me that people know that you're going through a tough time. Not everyone gets a fair shake in life. That's why I entered the news business. Life isn't fair. You know, some people just can't get a break, but you don't need one. You can find your own path. You can set the own tone of your life. You can do what you want to do. It's not an overnight success story. It's taken me 10 to 15 years. And at times, everyone was telling me, why don't you quit? Why don't you give up and do something else? I think if you just stay the path and you stay true to yourself, what you want to do with your life and your goals, and you have a plan, it will happen. And it's just, you really have to have that hunger and that drive and find balance in your life, and regardless of what it is, it will happen for you because it happened for myself, it happened for my brother, and if my story can motivate or inspire or just relate, then I've done my job, and I'm just getting started. You know, nowhere near is society, you know, operating as it should when it comes to mental illness and addiction. And that's my next platform. And for all the families out there dealing and struggling with that, and the people that struggle and people who are suffering with their illnesses, they suffer alone and they keep it to themselves because they're afraid. And I just want people to know, if I can shout it from the rooftops, it doesn't have to be that way. Your life doesn't have to be the way that it is.
That is great. Melissa, what did you get out of writing the book?
Peace of mind. I forgave myself for neglecting and not helping my brother when I should have years prior. I just really embraced vulnerability as a woman and knowing that I can be aggressive professionally and still be vulnerable with my family, friends, and loved ones, and that it's okay and you can find balance even through chaos. And I've just learned it's the little things that people do. You can't push people and pressure people to be at your speed and your level. You know, you have to acknowledge the steps that each individual takes. And, you know, I think that people need to acknowledge that more within themselves and their loved ones.
That is a lot to learn, Melissa. My guest has been Melissa McCarty, author of the book News Girls Don't Cry. Melissa, you've probably piqued the interest of some of my listeners. If they want to learn more about you or learn more about the book, where would you direct them to go?
The book is available on Amazon and Barnes, and there's a website as well, newsgirlsdon'tcry.com.
That is great. Melissa, thank you so much for being my special guest here on The Bill Frank Show. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thank you.